The first official talks for 2 years between North and South Korea have just ended. North Korean delegation travelled to the border in a motorcade and then walked across the military demarcation line into a village that straddles the demilitarised zone that separated the two Koreas for about 60 years. Now, the talks lasted 11 hours, and to dissect what was discussed and proposed, on the line, the Australian's China correspondent Rowan Callick in Beijing. Rowan, thank you for your time.
No worries. Good evening, Luke, and good evening, listeners.
Thank you so much for being available. I'm just intrigued to know how difficult or otherwise it is to cover a story like this. I'm imagining that the talks were broadcast live around the world and that there was a full transcript provided to you. Just give us a sense of how difficult it is to cover something like this.
No, they weren't broadcast live around the world. And no, there was no transcript. So the talks took place in a private room. And the only two people I think who were able to watch the talks live were Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea, and Kim Jong-un, who is described as the supreme leader of North Korea. So they had hotlines. I am essentially the China correspondent for the Australian.
Yes.
And that's pretty a busy job for me with 1.4 billion people here. But I have been to North Korea. I go to South Korea reasonably regularly. I was there a few weeks back, and I keep a very close eye. I know people there, and I believe that I speak to a lot of people and can get a fair idea of what's yeah. happening without being in the room.
Yeah, of course. I just wondered how difficult it would be for people, and you've explained that perfectly. So based on your great knowledge of the region and the history between the two, are we perhaps back home in Australia silly to expect much might come of this? Or, in fact, are you hopeful, or has it been indicated, at least in part to you, that this might be the beginning of something completely different?
No, I don't think people are silly at all. I think this is it comes after a pretty terrible year in which people had a right to fear that something awful might happen. As we know, when people have control of terrible weapons, sometimes, even by mistake, terrible things can happen. So
yeah.
we had a year, everything ratcheting up. And so the two sides getting together 2 years after they last talked is pretty good. And, of course, we've got a lot of unfinished business. It's not just the main game at the moment of halting and, if possible, though I believe it's probably not going to happen, preventing the nuclearization of North Korea. At least we can try and restrict it, put it on hold and so on. But we've not only got that, we've still got the whole unfinished business from the big Korean War with 1950 to 1953, 2 million people killed, including 340 Australian soldiers, and 1,200 Australians wounded during that conflict. It's only a peace treaty. There's no... it's only a truce. There's no peace treaty concluded.
Yeah.
So in many ways, what we're seeing is this is the last sort of gasp of the old Cold War coming back from beyond the grave.
Gotcha.
And has a real capacity to inflict fear and danger on people. And so it's great that the two sides were talking. It's only a first step, but it does show there's a potential for more to happen. They've agreed further talks. The North Koreans are going to participate in the Winter Olympics in South Korea, and so we'll see them marching beneath a unification flag like they did in Sydney in 2000.
Yeah.
Everyone applauded that. I think they'll applaud it even more in South Korea, and they've agreed that the two militaries will talk to each other. That's pretty important.
Yeah.
But
just on the Olympics, I assume that one of the benefits of them being part of the Winter Olympics in Seoul will be, it's unlikely that the Supreme Leader might get up to some naughty stuff.
Oh, yes, I think this gives everyone a sort of breathing space, at least until the Olympics are over at the end of February. So the Olympics are 9th to 25th of February in a place called Pyeongchang in the northwest of South Korea. So I think we can count on some respite from the worst lunacies until at least that's over. But I think after that, there's the possibility of building on this the two sides have agreed to talk again, but there's a lot of scepticism, which is appropriate, from others in the region, including particularly it seems in China and Japan. Those two countries are saying, well, this is all very well, but we've seen this before. We've seen North Korea play soft and hard, and maintaining their nuclear program all the time, and we've seen them try to divide and rule the group of nations most involved in trying to restrict what North Korea is doing. And there's no sign that the nuclear armory is on the table. The opposite. Their chief negotiator said it's not there, but he said, "Don't worry," to the people there. He said, "Don't worry. Not aimed at you and our brethren," as he called them, in South Korea. It's not aimed at Canada. It's not aimed at Canada. It's not aimed at China. Not aimed at Russia. It's all aimed at the United States.
Yes.
There we go.
How comforting. What about the notion? We had someone suggest a week or two back the health of the North Korean people. And this was evidenced, I think, by a soldier who defected, and his health, that in fact the sanctions had taken, you know, significant hold, and there were issues amongst the population. Do you see anything in that?
Yeah. I think this is a great point that you make, Luke. I think that there are two things that you can say might have pushed Kim into agreeing to these talks, and so. One is just he feels confident that they've got the nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them. The second one is the point you've just made, that he's worried by the extent of the economic sanctions. The fact, which I believe is a fact, that pretty well every country in the world now is engaging with them. There was a thought at some time that China was only half-hearted, but the Chinese have got they feel seriously set up with Kim, and they've been putting the sanctions into effect. And the second thing that Donald Trump claims as part of the push to get talks going, as they have started, is that his tough talking has put the wind to an extent up him and his regime, worrying that, in fact, the Americans might try some military strike. Mm. So those are things that might be pushing him into it rather than him feeling relaxed.
Yeah. I appreciate your expertise, but I've got to ask you, what's it like living in Beijing, working essentially for the Australian media there? Is it an adventure? Hard work, I'm assuming, but walk me through what it's like.
It's an adventure. It's exciting. I think China is the most important and exciting place. Obviously, it's for Australia, it's the most important economic partner and increasingly important in all sorts of other areas as well. Mm. And one feels, being here, something like it must have felt like to be, I think, in ancient Rome at the time when Moses was calling the show, or in New York in the, say, in the 1950s. I think we're seeing China expanding, for good or ill, into becoming a huge, if not the hugest, global player. So to be here at the centre of it, It's not the greatest place to live, Beijing, I would have to say. It's very cold as it is now and very hot in the summer.
Yeah.
But it's exciting and it's a great story to cover.
Brilliant. Rowan, outstanding. Great to talk to you. Appreciate your time very much.
And you. Thanks, Luke.
Good on you. And follow Rowan, please, in The Australian. His stories there from North and South Korea and particularly China.